Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harris. With me, as always, is my co-host RJ Sines.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Good morning, Vietnam. That's what I just said. We're your in-house comedy gurus who talk about what it's funny, why it's funny, and have you seen Planet Earth 2 yet?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Huh.
Have you seen it?
No.
What are you come on, man. It's a good time. You get like islands and grasslands.
Yeah, it looks good. I saw the flamingos
it's
in the
like
trailer.
15 years in the making. You gotta go watch it.
I'm working on it. Today we're talking about Robin Williams. You know him as Robin Williams. The best thing we can do is just give a good impression. RJ, give me your best impression of Robin Williams.
Well, I wanted to take some time just to, workshop.
Do you have a good one?
Well, I'm working on it.
And I'm a terrible Robin Williams.
Right, that's what I want to take some time just to kind of carve this out here. Let's start with some sounds, some classic Robin Williams sounds.
Basic building blocks of Robin Williams are like,
so you start,
ha, hey, hey, ha, hoo.
Go upstairs, and you're like, hoo. And you go direct downstairs, and you're like, ha,
ha, hoo.
So that's, and then you get talking a little faster in between the sounds. So, and again, stick with the back of your throat. Can you give me some of that?
Okay. Hey, hoo. It's me, Robin Williams. I'm here talking to you. Ooh, ha.
That's not bad.
Is that more subtle? Yeah.
That's not bad. And you can kind of throw in like a little bit like weirder noises too. Be like, ah, I go outside in the sun. I'm like, ah.
And I went over here and I'm like, oh no, look at the outfit of this. Ooh. And then I go over here and I'm like, hey, don't touch me there. Ooh. Something like that. Is that good?
A lot of oohs. Yeah. Really
ooh.
Good.
Oh.
Okay. So you're even getting into the next and final step. Is think of a couple or a few character impressions that you, Ben, can do well. So like if you did like Charles Barkley and Gandalf, right? And then insert them in your just everyday Robin Williams speak.
Okay. So you just got to list the celebrities and then do the impressions. You go, oh, hey, I walk downstairs and I said, oh, there's Charles Barkley. Hey, he's talking to Gandalf and he's like, hey, you knucklehead. And then he comes over here and he's like, you shall not pass. Is that good?
That's perfect. It's and it's just, and then you can work even backwards from that.
Okay.
Just get a little bit soft. Like, anyways, going downstairs, never thought I'd see, who I thought? Bugs Bunny. And what's up, Doc? And I'm like, oh my God, huh, I'm in Looney Tunes Land.
That's good.
It's so dumb.
Mostly noises.
He's just mostly an animated character.
But that's just to say, we don't even need to give him an introduction because it's Robin Williams. You already know him. But first, before we get into the gist of the episode, what is going on in the world of news in comedy podcasting land? RJ.
Oh, okay.
Stumbled across the
finish line
on that one.
Honestly, I'm still like in how to perfect my Robin Williams impression. Ooh. And we can just do that the whole episode, which I'm really excited for. I kind of want to skip to the news. But there's some good stuff to talk about.
Could you do the news as Robin?
Okay, here we go. The box office news. Very important. Potential Barbie movie here in the works. Amy Schumer. Yeah. Oh, I'm a blonde. Oh, Amy Schumer.
I can't do it anymore. So I'd like to do the news as me, and then we'll go from there.
And then we'll do it as Robin mocking you.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
Oh, look at me. Archer Science. Skinny guy. Oh, funny. Ha-ha. Never. Ha-ha. Podcast. Ha-ha.
Stupid. All right, I'm done.
Okay.
So there's a potential Barbie movie in the works starring Amy Schumer, right? You know, the whole plot is kind of like, Barbie gets kicked out of Barbie Land for not being perfect enough, ends up in the real world, and you know what I say? I say early 2000 Disney Channel movies called, and they want their ridiculous premise back. Ever heard of Life Size? Ever heard of Tyra Banks? Huh?
You're not wrong.
Oh, have you heard of her?
Yeah.
Very successful. And Lindsay Lohan's in it too. She's the girl.
Oh, is that the name of the movie, Life Size?
It's called Life Size.
Yeah.
It's literally a Barbie that comes to life.
Cool.
So, you know what? We have not forgotten,
people
of the internet, and I mean,
you haven't forgotten.
I certainly have not.
I was watching X-Men the Animated Series while you were watching Life Size on Disney Channel.
That's a pretty good one. So, I don't know. Could be good. I'll give it a shot. Amy Schumer's pretty funny for the most part, but
I can see her being really, really good in the role of outcast and then so she becomes like bitter and sarcastic. AKA, she becomes Amy Schumer.
I see her at like the middle of the movie where like the character's down their luck and she's kind of like on the side of New York City, like smoking a cigarette, like yelling at a pigeon. I was supposed to be a Barbie! like that kind of a thing. It's like raining. I don't know. TV news, something pretty interesting. Emma Stone just hosted last Saturday on Saturday Night Live for her third time, moving her way up the ranks, up into a very talented list of other three-timers like Will Ferrell, Martin Short, Lily Tomlin, and even Robin Williams. They've all hosted SNL three times. So it's one of those things that's got me thinking, like, do you think that she's got, you know, the comedy chops to be like, you know, these people who have been hosting? I mean, there's only like 50 people have hosted at least three times or more, and only 9 have hosted 4 times, and 15 have hosted 5 times or more, and the list goes on from there. But she's in the, you know, big leagues now. Think she can hold her own?
When I think of her, I don't think necessarily comedy right away.
Yeah.
But then again, Easy A, I mean, she has some kind of lot more lighthearted roles.
Yeah, yeah.
But when she goes on SNL, she's funny. She I think her second time on did a Gilda Radner impersonation.
And that was really good.
It was really good. And I think maybe in her monologue, she talks about how she was an idol of hers.
Yeah.
And you can see it. You can totally see it. And she does it super well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I could see this SNL going really well. And she'd get back a couple more times.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Maybe end up in the five-timers club. The very prestiged five-timers club. I was also just looking. Alec Baldwin has hosted 15 times.
That's not true.
16 times.
That's not true.
It's true.
That's not true.
Look it up.
Okay.
I'm not kidding you.
Wait. Did you just say your catchphrase?
Yes, I did.
Very calmly.
You caught me looking it up. But yeah, he's hosted, check me on this, 16 times, which is one more than Steve Martin, but he hasn't hosted since 2011. Isn't that crazy?
Really?
Yeah. The reigning champ hasn't hosted in 5 years, but he's been on so much doing his Donald Trump impersonation.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so classic. And I don't know if they pay him. I assume they pay him. But, you know, he's coming back every week to do at least one sketch being Donald Trump. So, so funny. But it's only a matter of time before he comes back to host again. You got the number right there?
I'm working so hard.
How hard can it be? You type in www.
Because it went immediately to best host.
No,
hey, you're not wrong. I thought you were wrong. I assume always that you're wrong. As of September 2011,
boom!
Alec Baldwin held the record for hosting SNL. Wait, you said he hadn't hosted since
2011.
Oh, that's what you did.
That's so weird. Can you smell that? It smells like you got burnt.
Ow.
Ow.
Burnt.
Ow, I got burnt.
With 16 episodes, beating out Steve Martin with 15 episodes. I guess the last time I had checked, they were tied with
Tom Hank?
John Goodman.
No.
For 13. They had all done 13.
Obviously, you haven't watched SNL since 2010.
No. No. No.
Prove it, man. Look, that's when it was. So
I swear it was the 40th reunion where I heard that. Or maybe it was just John Goodman made that joke. He's like, what? I've hosted 13 times. It's a Goodman's dozen. And that cut me in half, dude. That was a funny joke.
That's good Goodman impression, too.
Right?
He's like, it's a Goodman's dozen. Ever read about it?
He's like, wait.
What's the deal with that?
Now you're going to Jerry Seinfeld.
I know. That's what you sounded like.
All right. But here we go. We're into the podcast now. We're talking today about Robin Williams. We just want to take this moment to say that, you know, Robin Williams is no longer with us. But his comedy and his playful spirit will always live on in our hearts. Robin had such a colorful entertainment career, from stand-up to television to movies, from his early start in San Francisco stand-up to Happy Days, Mork and Mindy, and then his breakout role in films as Good Morning Vietnam, The World According to Garp, into the 90s with Hook and Aladdin and Miss Doubtfire, Jumanji, and then eventually jumping into more children's films like Happy Feet, Night at the Museum. Those are some successful flicks of
his.
Yeah,
there's like 10 films in between each and every one of those. He's done right. so many things.
So the thing that kind of sets him apart is, you know, we just named all these amazing movies, but he also has this, you know, plethora of movies that are just not comedies at all.
Yeah.
Where he just jumps into the dramatic side. I think he went to Juilliard, never graduated from college, but he really embraced theater. He really embraced the process of acting and all of that. He was insane and embraced that too.
Yeah.
But I think that juxtaposition of both of those entities is what makes Robin Williams the best.
Call me insane. Who are you calling insane?
Sorry, Robin.
I know. But no, that's a good point. I mean, there aren't a lot of, you know, I don't know how to say this anyway. There's not a lot of decorated comedians who have such a great memory of their dramatic career.
Right.
Right. There's not... You know, Jerry Seinfeld doesn't do any of
right, yeah.
the drama roles. Jim Carrey, I would say, is similar in the sense that he does that.
Yeah, their careers kind of mimic each other a little bit. I think Jim Carrey is a little bit younger. But yeah, you know, success on TV with Jim Carrey was on The Color Purple.
Yeah.
No.
In Living Color.
In Living Color.
That's a completely different movie. Next week on the podcast,
we're talking
race
about
relations.
Oprah yeah. in The Color Purple.
Yeah.
In Living Color, and then had a almost tough time transitioning to movies, and then broke out into movies and became a star.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We're talking about Robin Williams, and this is why he's funny. Robin Williams is funny because he is a nonstop freight train of this pure silliness that leaves you wondering, where does the well-thought-out jokes begin, and where does the ridiculous, off-the-fly improvisation end? You can't keep up with them. No comedian before or since has ever brought down the house with the same speed and confidence that he had. Robin mastered the art of play and often spoke about how the world is filled with joy, and you just have to go out there and find it.
Wow.
I mean, this guy... Really, we can't give him enough accolades. I mean, he's got, you know, a whole list of awards here. But still, like, our podcast, we want to honor Robin Williams. He's one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, and, you know, there's no better way, in my mind, to remember Robin Williams than to just reminisce on his comedic style. It's so contagious. It's so exciting. We just spent a good 2 minutes doing impersonations of him and trying to, you know, map that out. And that's so fun to me. It's he makes it a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. He makes comedy something for me that I look at and go, that's a challenge. That's yeah. something that not anyone can do. And certainly Robin was the only one who could do what he did.
Yeah. You shared the link with me of his Inside the Actor's Studio.
I didn't share that.
Oh, that was a different RJ from a different podcast.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
We're talking about Robin Williams. This
Very coincidental. I understand.
But yeah, he talks about how stand-up really shaped his acting career and his love of theater because... You were just out there, like mm-hmm. being a stand-up comedian. You have to bear it all, and you have to take risks, and you have to be a risky person to go out there in front of like a crowd of drunk people and try to make them laugh.
Yeah, I think Billy Crystal had said, "Nobody had the balls like Robin Williams did." That's my best. Either that, I think of Mike Wazowski, and when he goes. Harryhausen's. That's the only way I can start thinking about Billy Crystal.
Yeah, that's a good
Anyways,
start.
But it was so true. He said, no one had the balls that Robin Williams did. And that was a weird thing for me, because I always think about this, like, yeah, you know, every actor or stand-up, in a sense, has to have some gusto or, like, confidence when they go out on the stage.
Sure.
But for me, like, looking at the things Robin Williams does,
just like podcasters, we have to have a ton of courage to get up out of bed and come over to this janky studio and sit in our jammies
in front of a live studio audience. Oh gosh, it takes a lot of gusto.
I'm joking. Continue.
No, but my point is, like, he does these ridiculous things, and I'm looking at that being like, okay, like, if I knew what to say, like, I think I could do that. But he'll get up there not knowing what he's going to say or where this is going to take him.
Right.
You know, he'll take someone's scarf out of the audience.
Right, yeah, that's the perfect example. James Lipton in the Inside the Actors Studio bit with Robin Williams asks him, like, just asking him about his improvisation. Right. He goes, what's different about you? Is your mind faster than ours? What is it about you? And he gives him this compliment in this question.
Yeah.
And Robin Williams is taken back, but then he just kind of stands up and starts going for it. Like, he just starts...
Which is how he answers every question,
exactly.
By the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He stands up and starts performing.
But his mind is just going to... I feel like he's literally saying everything his mind is putting out there. Like, yeah. He's just unfiltered, just going. And then he ends up, he sees this girl who's just dying of laughter. Like, literally, she looks like she's being asphyxiated. And and the camera cuts to her and he goes, oh my gosh, is she going to die? And he goes, miss, can I have your scarf? And he takes the scarf from her. And then he just starts going.
Yeah.
He does. He wraps it around his head and he's like this little Indian woman from... Yeah. From Bali, and he's like, oh, hey, it's me, I'm sorry, I just got back from Bali, I just released my new album, and it's, I'm not sorry.
Yeah, it's totally.
So good. But then, yeah, he takes it and then proceeds to just do,
like,
so
20
many different
characters.
Things. Yeah, he just creates these characters.
And that's the thing for me, like, that's the balls there, is going, I don't know what's gonna happen, but I trust myself, I trust my techniques, I trust everything in my subconscious just to let it flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a weird thing about, you look, you know, we've talked before about style of jokes, you know, the traditional sense, premise, and then like the punchline, right?
Mm-hmm.
His jokes will do these dances, right? Well, he'll start out with maybe a silly observation about life,
mm-hmm.
and then branch out into a plethora of characters. And sometimes spend minutes on end as Elmer Fudd,
right,
talking about something completely off topic, and yet he'll find a way to bring it all the way back around again to what he was talking about in the
right.
beginning. And it's, you know, you're half laughing, half in awe.
Right, amazing.
Especially if you know, have ever done any kind of performance. You're like, what?
Yeah.
How is he doing this? What
so
is going
fast.
On? Unbelievable. Looking at clips of him on like the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson,
mm-hmm.
like young Robin Williams, it's like, you know, I think I was watching him and it was like watching Taz the Tasmanian Devil from Looney Tunes.
Yeah, just
spinning around 100 miles per hour. Like, he jumps up out of his seat and there's a little microphone like up above him and he's like, oh, look at this. I'm like, oh, Flipper. He starts like barking at the microphone and it starts running around in the audience and like the house lights come on and he's like, oh, thank you, Jesus. Oh, here we are. And he like starts going up the stairs like, you are in the Lord's favor. You're in the Lord's favor. And he starts like blessing people and he like grabs this one dude's hand and the guy's like really unsure of him. So he's
yeah.
like, it's okay to hold my hand, son. It's like, what the heck is going
yeah,
on? But he's
ridiculous.
Going for it and people are losing their minds.
Yeah. I feel like he really, you can tell he really delighted. I think this is why he shined a lot dramatically too. He really delighted in characters.
Yeah.
He loved to create a character that was ridiculous or believable or both or unbelievable or just, you know, grounded. You know, like we watched a video that talked about his idol, Jonathan Winters, another comedian on like Tonight Show, all the...
Oh, yeah, back from, you know, before Carson when it was Jack Parr.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he is same style, just going, but with that character-centric focus. And one of his famous bits is Jack Parr gives him a stick and says, let's create some scenes together. And he takes the stick and he just becomes, like, you just, all of a sudden you see him come into this world. He casts it out. Both of them have amazing sound effects, but he just goes, well, Marty, trying to catch a lot of fish. We've been teaching these boys here how to fish. Oh, looks like we got a big one. Hey, Martha, we got you. You can't swim there anymore. And he's like catching his wife. But it's so good. You see, you can see how his influence was seeing these characters come to life. And that's what was valuable to him.
Yeah, I love that. And I would love to spend some time, especially this episode, talking about these characters, especially in some of these films and TV shows that he's been in. I think even in early years, which was kind of a fluke thing, how he ended up getting the role on Happy Days as Mork from Ork, which is an alien, because they couldn't think of a good alien name in the 70s. I don't know. It's a ridiculous name.
Yeah, it's like first but thought.
This is not like, if you're like our generation, you probably have not heard of Mork from Ork. And you probably have not heard anyone say, Nano, Nano. But this was a very popular icon in that time. Many people were saying Nanu, Nanu, like it was freaking YOLO. And Robin Williams plays this character who is this innocent native to Earth. And he has to learn the ways of how to become more human and understanding emotion and social cues and racism, all these things. And you know, it got its own spinoff show for 4 years, Mork and Mindy, which, again, I look at that, I'm like, I don't know how that, you know.
Or why.
How or why. Who was that? Yeah, golly. But, you know, there was some really classic things, and it was a great platform for Robin to play. Like we talked about early on with this premise of why he's funny. He was the master of play, and he could just be silly and lighthearted and very airy. Like he had a very floaty way about it. Especially with Mork, he kind of like was on his toes with some things, and like he just looked innocent and kind and like a child.
And I mean, half of Mork's character is just a Robin Williams-esque, you know, kind of improvisational experience. Like he's just kind of going and making beep beep,
lots like of noises. Alien noises.
Yeah,
and there's like even parts where, like, you know, the TV remote or whatever like changes the channel like through Mork.
It so, changes
like,
his personality.
It's like his, you know, he's of course Robin. It's just a way to showcase Robin Williams, a bajillion impressions of like Walter Cronkite or whoever, like all these people. And It's just a brilliant, brilliant way for him to be broadcast out. And this was something that, you know, the world first saw of Robin Williams and clung to. Because this is the thing that now, just in every single one of his characters and every single one of his performances, at the core of it is this fun character who just gets to rattle around sound effects and show off all the bells and whistles that they have.
So good. Along with just like massive physical, I mean, he was just as much as he is off the cuff with his mind on his improv stuff, like he would just lay his body down for any joke, for any situation. Like some of these Mork and Mindy clips that I've seen, he's on the ground, he's flailing, he's, you know, going over couches and stuff. Like
he moves as sharply as Jack Black does. Does that make sense? Like, again, Robin is a smaller man, and Jack Black is kind of smaller too, but even kind of Chris Farley has him too, like, sharp, little, move it. I think I did that in one of the episodes we've already done, and no one can see me moving my arms, but I'm trying to let you see me. But that's one of the best things about his physical comedy, is it's precise. And it's acute. It's very accurate.
Yeah. And then from Happy Days and Mork and Mindy, he jumped onto the big screen, kind of had a tough time getting started. He did Popeye in 1980. And that was met with some pretty big opposition. not 100% his fault.
It's not enough spinach.
If there was more spinach, it would have...
Yeah.
They
told craft services, we need more spinach on set. And you know what? It just wasn't in the budge.
But probably one of his, you know, like, kind of Robin Williams defining roles is his role in Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that movie.
What?
Just kidding. That's what we intro'd with, you silly. It's like, that is his breakout, like, goosh, goosh, goosh. Robin Williams is in the building. He's on the big screen. And this movie did such a good job. And, you know, it showcased a lot of his dramatic side, too.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, there is scene after scene where it's just Robin Williams as, you know, this radio caster for a military base in Vietnam. And he's just going through it, man. Mm-hmm. He's doing dee 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 dee. This just in, ladies and gentlemen. Here we have Richard Nixon coming in with the news. I'm not doing all that stuff that we've been talking about. He does so well, but it's just that version of himself in that movie.
Yeah, but it's good. It's the contrast of this wacky dude versus, you know, the militant situation that he was in.
Yeah,
all these other characters are just super straight laced. Maybe they're laughing, but they're not supposed to be laughing.
Yeah.
And he's just the most over the top, you know?
Yeah. And that's a good juxtaposition of, you know, Robin Williams couldn't ever imagine him, you know, being, you know, in a military environment. And, you know, two of the higher ups in this movie just hate him.
Yeah.
They hate him. They hate his brand of comedy. They hate the things he says. They hate the music he plays. But all the troops love him. It's this awesome story. One of the funniest things, which totally reminded me of things that happened to me all the time. Some of the time.
You were in Vietnam?
Yeah.
How old are you?
He's like just arrived at the military base and he's getting a tour of the facilities. And one of the guys is like, "Oh, you're the new guy. Oh, you're funny guy. Sweet. So say something funny. Can you say something funny?"
Yeah.
And Robin Williams goes, "Oh, I doubt that." Like, and just walks like, just away
right away.
Yeah. And the guy loses it. Like, he's like, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, ugh. I feel like every time someone's like, "Oh, RJ, I heard you got a podcast. What kind of podcast is it?" I'm like, "Oh, it's a comedy podcast." Like, "Oh, really? You're funny?" Like, unfortunately, I'm not that funny. It's a very sad podcast.
It's a very somber look at
laughter. Yeah, it's a lot like This American Life. It's like 99% invisible. It's all sad.
No, it's not all sad.
Well, 99%. I take it back.
They're good stories.
99% visible. You know, I love you. You're good stuff.
Roman Mars, if you can hear us,
give me one of those tokens, baby.
We're massive fans. Oh, we'll contribute.
I want that chip. Anyways,
from there we got Aladdin, which is another showcase of just massive improvisational skills.
I mean, 10,000 years can really give you a crick in the neck.
But even more than that, like, musical now, like,
oh boy,
just ramp that up. Yeah, so much of this was improv'd. And it's just half of it. Like, I think there's something like 40 total voices, different voices.
Oh, 52
that Robin actually does. Yeah, yeah. But just impression after impression, and it keeps, you know, the older generation engaged while the younger generation is just watching a cartoon. It's so good.
I mean, like, we were raised on this movie.
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you any of those characters growing up, but it doesn't matter because it transcends time. It's stupid. It's funny. It's silly. It's a blue genie who can transform into any shape, animal, whatever. Make things appear, make things disappear. Lights, explosions, dance numbers. It's so entertaining. And it's the essence of Robin Williams.
So good.
There is nothing more similar to Robin Williams than the cartoon personification of him in
of a
the
genie
movie,
of
Aladdin.
A blue genie.
Yes.
Yeah. I had no idea who Rodney Dangerfield was, but every day of my life I would say, "Oh, I can't believe I'm losing through a rug." Like, so good. Like, he just laced that in there with his ridiculous over the top, and man, it resulted in one of my favorite performances of his in a comedy.
Absolutely. One of the funniest things I ever read about Aladdin, which spoke more to Robin Williams' heart, was he had been working. So Aladdin came out in 92. Prior to that, he was doing the movie Hook with Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Right. Now, after that had all happened and wrapped and they moved, you know, Aladdin starts, you know, being recorded and stuff. Steven Spielberg starts working on Schindler's List.
Right.
Which, if you recall, is not a very fun movie to be.
It's not upbeat.
Definitely not. It's a great movie, but super intense. Definitely not like Aladdin. And so every night, Robin Williams would call Steven Spielberg and just cheer him up and just workshop all these impressions and all these mm-hmm. lines that he's got the next day and what he did earlier today. And Steven Spielberg talked about how, oh my gosh, and it was just like after these long days of filming these like concentration camps, like really intense scenes of like sadness, like it just kept me going. And that's what I love so much about Robin Williams. Even one time he calls and he's in full character. He's like, I'm calling representing the people for the Waldheimer's Association, a society devoted helping raise money to help older Germans who have forgotten everything before 1945. And Steven Spielberg said, I just died laughing and thanked him for everything. But that's just at the core of him. He has this sweet like joy. Yeah. That he just gives away to people. And in these children's films, right? He does this all the time. I mean, Aladdin was just the beginning
right, yeah.
of so many kids' films that he ends up doing.
In
right?
the next year, you have 1993, Mrs. Doubtfire. And that is another showcase of just his commitment to character. I mean, you have the dad. I think his name's Alan. Or maybe I'm mixing up Jumanji. The dad who is, you know, this failed comedian voice actor who's trying to make it and it's affecting his home life. But he loves his kids. Like he loves his kids so much. And then, she files for a divorce. What is her name? Sally Fields, files for a divorce.
God bless her.
Oh man. She's so good in this. James Bond. What's his name?
Oh boy, Pierce Brosnan.
Yes, he's so good as the like jerk boyfriend that comes in. He's not even a jerk. He's like a great guy.
Robin Williams just hates him. Is it Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah. Oh, right. Definitely.
Look it up.
Yeah, I will.
I mean, I'll take your word for it. But look
internet's
it up.
Told me.
Yeah, that's not it.
But so yeah, he creates this masterful character within the movie, you know, like he has to make the character Mrs. Doubtfire so he can be their nanny, and of course he can pull it off because he's Robin Williams and it's so good.
Yeah, and this to me it's a children's film kind of, but it more so isn't, but I don't know, this movie to me showcases so much of how he can commit to the character.
Right.
He'll do these scenes in Mrs. Doubtfire where he's having to be both, you know, the dad and Mrs. Doubtfire. And he's changing, running back and forth between the rooms and just seamlessly mm-hmm. two different people.
Yeah. Having a conversation with himself, even to the point where he's got the fat suit on, but he doesn't have the mask on.
Yeah.
And she's coming into the kitchen and he has no idea what to do. He just mashes his face in the cake.
Yeah.
And then it's covered in the white frosting and he comes up. He's like, hello,
daddy.
Oh, so good. And the mask is falling off. She puts it in her coffee as like, it's like creamer.
Oh, the movie also so kind of reminds me of Liar Liar. You know, like the dad has to win his kids back and he's got,
uh-huh.
and it's kind of like this weird thing that he has to do in order to get the kids back. And we were just talking about how Jim Carrey has a similar career. Yeah. I don't know, just remind me of that.
No, it's good.
Kind of funny thing, but there's just so many of, you know, these kinds of characters that he'll do just fully committed.
Yeah.
And
nothing holds him back, really. Like, you'd think that a fat suit would hold him back. A mask and a fat suit, and you have to be a woman. But no, like, he
plays soccer.
Yeah, he plays soccer. He's sweeping the broom. He does that Aerosmith song. One of my favorite moments in Mrs. Doubtfire. It's a family classic in the Harris household. But is he's at the pool with the family, and Pierce Brosnan like orders a drink, says something witty, and then walks away. And he's just so pissed. He just grabs a lemon and hucks it at the back of his head. And he's like, "Oh, dearie, I didn't see who did that. Oh, they were so mad. Did you tip the bar? Oh, it must have just been a walk-by fruiting." Like, oh, my gosh. Robin, oh, that's so good. It's like, oh, just some of the best lines.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we've talked already about how in all of his characters, he still incorporates so much improvisation. It's amazing to me that he can be so committed to the Mrs. Doubtfire character, and yet those subtleties of Robin improv comedy through, just shines through. It was the drink that killed him. Hit bike in his truck. Like, genius.
You can't take it orally, dear.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and so many of his characters, I mean, whether he's had good movies or bad movies, he's still just straight committed.
Sure.
I mean,
and
I think
he has some bad movies.
Even the same year. Well, this is a different thing, but also showcases the same point I'm making. Good Will Hunting and Flubber both came out like the same exact week.
That's true.
Like, in time. You could go to the theaters.
97?
Yeah, 97. In like November, December 97. Yeah. You could go to theater and see a double feature of Flubber and Good Will Hunting. And one got an Academy Award, one got a Razzie. And either way, you see Robin Williams so committed to the role that he has crafted.
Did you grow up with Flubber?
Of course I did.
I loved Flubber.
All I want to do is just watch Flubber play the frickin' drums. Like the
Just that idea, especially the spray. I was like freaking spraying my shoes in the front yard trying to
with
dunk
Lysol,
a basketball. Yeah.
Slipping all over the place.
I loved that idea that you could just jump out of the roof.
Yeah, very Looney Tunesy. But yeah, he's committed to like the nerdy scientist.
But yeah,
role.
No, you're so right, because he's ridiculous, and then also Good Will Hunting is the best. Good Will Hunting, I love movies. This fall,
Wait,
Good Will Hunting,
what?
I do. I love movies, and this movie falls maybe in the top three for me.
Ooh.
It definitely falls in the category of movies that I watch once a year because they're that good. I only watch them once a year.
It's a religion.
What?
Yeah.
Good Will Hunting and then Shawshank Redemption right now are the two movies that I only watch once a year. But Good Will Hunting, man, he makes me cry in the movie. He's got just some of the most iconic lines. My favorite, the last line of the whole movie. He's reading the letter that he wrote to him, and he's realizing that his story has affected Will Hunting, and he's driving out to California. He's reading the line. It says, "You know, tell the mathematician guy, I'm sorry, but I had to go see about a girl." And Robin Williams like wells up with pride and just goes, "Son of a bitch, stole my line."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Oh, that's so good!" Like I say that all the time, and I forgot that that's him.
That
comes from that movie.
So good. And again, just inserting his comedy where he can, perfectly timed, perfectly the right amount, not too much. Yeah, another kind of fun character that we see him play in Birdcage with Nathan Lane, which is, I mean, Nathan Lane's way over the top.
Right.
But Robin Williams is still...
And you would think that would make Robin want to go over the top too, but he stays committed in this.
Yeah, he stays committed, and he's still flamboyant and fun dance instructor. I mean, for crying out loud, just picture Richard Simmons meets Robin Williams. Like, this is literally
right.
He's like a dance instructor. He's got his own studio, and that's so fun for me to watch him be this guy. He's trying to help Nathan Lane act straight, and he's like, I mean, Nathan Lane is gay in real life, but also in this movie, he is like...
Like over the top.
Very over the top flamboyant, which is just hilarious. Like, he can't drink water without like holding his fingers up, and Robin's like slapping him. He's like, "Oh!"
Yeah, it's so good. He's like, "You're a great performer. I'm a great director. Together we can fool them." And he's like, "Okay." And he lifts up his pinky. He's like, "Get that down!"
Oh!
Nathan Lane is really good in that too.
Yeah, I just want to talk about Birdcage because that's just that's something that like my wife's favorite movie, and that was like one of the first movies we watched when we were dating, and I was like, what the heck is this all about? But it's something you gotta throw in the Robin Williams ensemble of great movies just because he's a character that is so unique to his other cast of characters, yet at the same time so similar.
Yeah.
And then kind of a departure later on. I mean, he had quite a few bombs, to say the least. Hits and misses all
over the board. Or just kind of minor roles. He's Happy Feet. He's Night at the Museum. Sort of supporting roles in children's movies.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I don't think he does a bad job in those. But yeah, they're just definitely minor roles.
Well, that's what I was kind of saying with Aladdin. Like, he kind of, you know, dipped his feet into something that really was, I think, where he was meant to be, in a lot of ways. Just a joyful character, with a silly voice who can come to life on the screen, like, through a animation.
Yeah, same as Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, that actually parallels his real life. He really did struggle, with substance abuse. And he cites that one of his, you know, kind of redeeming what got him out of that was the birth of his son.
Oh, wow.
His first son. So I think these things kind of took a lot more priority for him. And I think that's why you'll see a lot more children's flicks in his later years. But that's also still, like what you were just about to say, some of his, he still has some main roles in World's Greatest Dad. It's a dark comedy that's, you know, seeing him dealing with the death of his son.
Yeah.
That he kind of very morbidly, like, tries to convince people is a suicide.
Yeah, and it's...
It's definitely a dark...
It's dark. A dark comedy, and what's weird is he has some good Robin Williams moments, but he really lets the comedy, like, shape around him. And his little reactions, very subtle. It's a subtle Williams.
More of a subtle, yeah.
Which is something that isn't, you know, if you cast Robin Williams as the lead role, you're probably going to milk it for all it's worth. But this is like an indie flick in 2009. It's one of the last, you know, critically good movies that he had done. And it really shines through, like, his ability still to capture that fun spirit amidst, like, it's honestly some pretty sick, like, dark, sad things. Themes of loss, themes of fame, themes of greed and jealousy and hatred and envy. But, yeah, in the end, he ends up finding, you know, the people who matter most. And, you know, that's a really touching thing. And he's, you know, so many of these movies, he plays a dad.
Yeah.
He's a good dad for every 90s kid.
Father figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. Yeah, the 90s were really good to him. We wanted to get more into why he's not funny, but we'll probably just gloss over that. Films like Popeye weren't very successful. RV.
Old Dogs.
Old Dogs.
Oy, boy. What's the one with the kid, Jack?
Where he is the kid.
Bully.
I love that friggin' movie.
And also, some people might fight me on this, but I didn't really like Patch Adams.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that good. No, I mean, yeah. You know, it's kind of like the thing where it's like, what? You don't think supporting kids who are sick is good? No, it's a good thing. Like, I like
the
idea. No,
but I get what you're saying, because it's almost forced optimism, you know? It's like forced hopefulness.
It's like, isn't this good that he's doing this thing? It's funny too,
But I have some of my favorite memories of that movie when in the beginning he's sitting in a group therapy session, and he's stuck with this guy who has this problem where he's always raising his hand as high as he can.
Yeah.
And he points to him and goes, yes, Gary, do you have a question? And he's like, quick, how much taller is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar than you? And then he lists like 10 things that the answer is somebody raising their hand. And oh my gosh, it cuts me down. It's really funny.
That's really good.
But yeah, there you go. There we have it. That's Robin Williams. You know what that means. It's the time of the show for Ben's Wacky Facts.
It's like a double theme song there. Got a ding from a real object. And a bang from the interweb sounds.
The best sounds that you've heard this side of the Northeast. Okay, Ben's Wacky Facts. Here we go. This is the part of the show where I, Ben, will tell RJ some wacky facts, and then he puts it on some type of sports arena.
Typically baseball.
We'll find out what it is. You ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here we go. 1996, Robin Williams reached an amazing milestone which not many actors can claim. He had two movies both reach over the $100 million mark in the same week in the U.S. Those movies were Birdcage and Jumanji.
Same week?
Same week.
They were both out at the same time?
Same week.
Man, he was king of the box office.
Right? 95. 96 was a good year. 95 was what? That other movie?
I thought 96 was Flubber and... what did I just say?
Yeah, are you
Flubber
kidding me? And... 93, Miss Doubtfire. 96, you got Jumanji, Birdcage. 97, you got Good Will Hunting. He's just the king of the 90s.
The king of the 90s is alive in Williams.
So put him on the field.
Yeah, that's easy. What's that Brad Pitt movie, Moneyball? It's, okay, I guess, I mean, I'm not surprised by the fact, but it, I mean, it's wacky, but it's not surprisingly that wacky. It's like people, you know, buy tickets to go to a home run derby, so like they know what they're getting into. Like, it's a home run, kind of wacky, but like, you know that it's, you know.
You're not surprised.
You're not surprised.
Eh.
I mean, it's good, but.
Good, not surprising.
Let's just see the next fact.
Sounds good. Here's fact number two. Apparently, Robin Williams' favorite childhood book was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Growing up, he would read the whole C.S. Lewis series out loud to his kids. He was quoted saying, once he was reading to his daughter Zelda, and she said, don't do the voices anymore. Just read it as yourself. So I read it straight, and she said, that's a lot better.
I thought the daughter was going to say, why'd you name me the worst possible name for a girl? Don't you realize there's an entire video game franchise based around my name, Dad? Read a book like a normal person for once.
Well, okay, here's then sub fact within the bonus fact. He didn't actually name her Zelda. His older
Nintendo
son
did.
Did. He asked his older son what his younger daughter should be named.
Zelda!
Okay, son, anything you want? Okay, good, Zelda.
And him and his mother at the time liked that, so they said Zelda it is.
That's nutty. That's just nutty.
Your little kid voice gets me every time.
I want Zelda!
Okay, Timmy, you put a lot of thought into this. What do you want to name yourself?
Put it on the field, Rage.
Honestly, it's like really like the book thing. It's like okay, sorry.
Face it.
It's like okay, no, but the whole fact altogether, it's gosh, okay, guy up to hit on the baseball diamond. Barry Manilow's up to hit, and he hits the ball. And it looks like it's just going to be a single.
Okay.
It's just like a easy, oh, he's running to first. And it's going to be, actually, no, it's going to be easy out.
Right.
It's easy
pop
out.
Pop fly.
Easy out. Guy misses it. Oh, well, he's right by first base. He can just toss it. You know, Barry Manilow gets out. He throws it into the stands.
Wait, Barry Manilow is the one that hit the ball?
Yeah. World famous baseball player. For the Cleveland Red Sox. You didn't know this? Ben,
keep going.
So the guy is like, oh man, I missed the catch. Easy out. He goes to first base, goes right over the first baseman's head and into the stands. Home run for Barry Manilow.
In the park home run, in the style of Angels in the Outfield, when all the Angels can't grab, like they're helping him move the ball around and they push the fat catcher in.
Look, man, who's rating the facts here?
No, you're the one that said it. You just described that scene from Angels in the Outfield.
Right. But no, I mean, not very wacky fact, but it turned out to be very wacky because I had no idea that chick's name was Zelda. That's insane.
That's pretty nutty.
I did so much research this week.
Okay. Here's wacky fact number three. Apparently, the Academy...
The son's name is Link. Oh, my gosh. Kidding me, man.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
so I won't cut you off.
It's good. It's good. Here's wacky fact number three. The Academy Awards rejected the bid for Aladdin to be in the category Best Adapted Screenplay.
Boo!
Because so much of William's role ended up being improvised. Initially, they came in, and I was just going to do... Oh, wait. This is Robin speaking now. Initially, they came in, and I was supposed to just do the scripted lines. And I asked, do you mind if I try something? And then 18 hours of recording later, they had the genie.
They turned him into a genie?
That's yeah.
So wacky.
No, but so the Academy Awards rejected the bid because the screenplay doesn't match up with the movie so much because it's all improv.
Oh,
the lines aren't there.
Ugh.
Isn't that nuts?
Those Academy bigwigs and okay, their stupid
rules.
That's
not what this is about. It's about how awesome Robin is that he improvised.
All right, whatever. It's subjective. I don't care. What might be one man's wacky is another man's tacky, if you know what I mean. That's deep. You can write that down and bring it back to me next week, and I'll say it again.
Okay.
No, that's good. Gosh. I mean, I knew he put a lot of work for the genie, but I didn't think the Academy would snub him like that. That's like you think that this home run... Okay, so Robin Williams out the bat, very easy baseball, easy hit, and...
It's not Barry Manilow, it's Robbie Williams.
And he gets hit by the pitch.
Oh.
And then the pitcher's like, and guess what? All that hard work you put in practicing, you suck. Get in the dugout. And then the whole crowd stands up and says, Robin Williams, Robin Williams. And then, like, the pitcher's like, no, no, I didn't think everyone was going to turn on me. No. I'm so sorry.
You take it off your shirt?
I, like, had an
itch. You started scratching yourself. I thought you were going to take off your shirt. Like, whoa,
the
dude.
The pitcher starts derobing. Oh, no. In fright. Dude, no, that was like a really weird thing.
That was
like
weird.
I had this insatiable itch on my
but
ribs.
But you did it on both sides, and it looked like you were just taking
I'm
your
so
shirt.
Sorry.
Oh, wow.
No one else had to see that and will ever see that.
So, it's getting hot in here.
Can't believe I'm losing to a rug.
All right. That's the wacky facts, so you know what that means. It's time for a hashtag whale mail of the week.
Kazing. Yeah, cut that. Don't say that.
Kazing?
I don't want to say that.
Too late. It's already in the podcast.
Nah, forget it.
Why don't you read it, Rage?
Yeah, this week's whale mail reads, hey guys, Mario here. Would love if you describe this picture for the fans. Also put me on the podcast, Noah. Okay, well, very easy request this week. This is a photograph of what appears to be a tortilla or some kind of pancake that has the eyes and where a mouth could be, like, cut out. And it's a white gentleman with large eyes.
And puka shell necklaces.
Oh, wow. That's a telling of
this
when this
be the 90s.
Photo was taken. He's holding this pancake or tortilla up to his face like, you know, Freddy Krueger holding, like, a human skin mask on. It looks like Dwight from The Office when he cuts off the face of the, like,
yes,
the CPR fake person puts on his face. So it's very creepy. I'm sure if you listeners at home are more curious as to what this might look like, Google creepy dude with pancake over his face.
Creepy pancake man.
Creepy pancake man.
From the early 90s. I'm sorry, no, from early 2000s.
No, you know what it is? Puka shell pancake man.
Puka shell pancake man.
Google that. I promise you will not be sad with the
Puka
results.
Shell pancake boy.
But
it's like a freaking kid.
Thanks, Noah. This is a first for us. I did enjoy the photograph.
Yeah, yeah. We've never had some visual imagery.
Yeah. Maybe this is a self-portrait of Noah. Maybe this is Noah saying, hey, I need you to accept me.
I'm in hiding.
I need you to accept me for who I am. I'm a pancake face, and you need to love me.
No, I hide behind the pancake that is Ooh. Society, you know? And he's trapped.
It's just a veil.
He's feeling, you know, feeling weird.
What's that noise?
Sorry.
He's feeling shoop shoop.
Yeah, he's feeling trapped, you know? Like, just trapped.
When you go downstairs, and you're like, ooh.
But anyway, thanks for listening, Noah. Thanks for writing in. If you, like other people, want to have us describe a picture,
That's a thing we can do.
That's a thing we just did. You can reach us by just emailing us at whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com.
You sounded unsure of yourself.
Well, I'm kind of recovering from that picture. It's a weird picture.
Yeah,
are we going to link it below?
I think you stared at it a little too long. I'll try to find a way to put it in the show description. All right, if you guys haven't checked out the show description, they're pretty good. No, I'm just kidding. But I put links and videos and whatnot in case you like hear a video that we're talking about and you're like, I want to see that video, and you can't find it. I'll direct link it below. Guys, you can find us at the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, or Stitcher. Be sure to check out our Twitter page at WhalePod or our Facebook page, Why Am I Laughing? And again, don't forget to email us at whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com.
If you want to hear more from RJ, you can find him on Twitter at Rodolfo the Brown.
And if you want to find Ben, you can find him at Twitter at BabyBaby100,000. Is it like a Britney Spears kind of a theme?
Yeah. Thanks again for tuning in this week. We got to thank Ben Sound for all of our theme musics. Please tell your friends about the show if you enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, tell them anyway. Maybe they'll enjoy it. Rate us on iTunes. It helps out tremendously. And be sure to check every Wednesday for a new episode.
I keep meaning to say some kind of challenge every week, but I finally remembered now that I'm here in this moment. I'm so glad. If we get like 20 iTunes reviews,
we're throwing it down. We're throwing down the challenge.
Yeah, I'm going to do something crazy.
All right, here it is. Ladies and gentlemen, if we get 20 iTunes reviews between now and we have to do it before Monday,
before
right?
The end of the year. Let's say okay. Let's say for the end of the year.
No, that's good.
Because it's everyone knows when that is.
RJ,
you think I care?
Will shave both eyebrows.
Oh no.
And then I will glue them all over my eyebrows.
But not directly on top, just an just inch above. Yeah. So he'll have double brows and I will have none.
I'll be so expressive and you'll be an alien.
Browless in Seattle. And he'll be too brow too furious.
Two brow Tuesdays.
But no, seriously, I think if we get 20 reviews, then straight up our 20th reviewer, I'm gonna like mail you a t-shirt that says like, I'm the 20th reviewer and I'm awesome and stuff, and this podcast is cool too.
Yeah, a limited edition WhalePod shirt.
Yeah, only one
ever
made with puffy paint. Puffy paint and like those bedazzle machines.
You'll get it Christmas morning.
No, it's after the
New Year. Oh, yeah, cool.
But maybe
Day.
You're the 20th reviewer.
Yeah, maybe before.
I don't know. Actually, right. You know what? If anyone reviews, I'll give them that shirt. I don't even care.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyone.
You're backing down out of the...
I don't care. I want to give out some shirts. It's Christmas. I'm feeling happy.
All right. Thanks for listening. We always end the show with comedy is all about... timing. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.